Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to Bits About Books. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give you a shout out to each of you in our following episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Our guest today is Mike Kunkel, author of the book, The Building Blocks of Sales Enablement.
And then something interesting happened. The performance consulting book started to get published. A concept called human performance technology, your HPT, started to gain some ground. Yeah, I got really excited. And then a couple of years go by, and I just don't see it happening. So there's always this bell curve, right? On the far right side, there were people who were doing this performance consulting and applying it to sales, and they had backgrounds and understood things like organization behavior and organization development and change management and, you know, Lean and Six Sigma and all of that, right? And they were applying those things to the sales profession and really moving the needle. But other than that far right side of the bell curve, right, everyone else was still talking about how do I get a seat at the table.
He's a sales transformation architect and an internationally recognized expert on sales training, sales effectiveness, and sales enablement. He spent 36 years in the sales profession and 26 years as a corporate leader or consultant, helping companies drive dramatic revenue growth through best-in-class training strategies and proven effective sales transformation systems. Mike is the founder of Transforming Sales Results, LLC, and today works as the Vice President of Sales Effectiveness Services for Sparks IQ, where he advises clients, publishes thought leadership, speaks at conferences, leads webinars, develops sales training courses, delivers workshops, and designs and implements sales enablement systems that get results. He collaborated with co-author Doug Wyatt to develop Spark IQ's Modern Sales Foundations curriculum and also authored Spark IQ's Sales Coaching Excellence course. Now, on to this insightful episode with Mike Kunkel. Mike, welcome to the show. I am delighted to have you, and I'm glad that I caught you early into the making of this book. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here, Subhanjan. I'm excited to talk with you today.
Tell us a bit about the work you are doing currently at Sparks IQ and before that.
Sure. Yeah, I've spent actually the last 36 years in the sales profession in one role or another. I did sold B2C and B2B, so I carried a bag. I managed sales for a few teams. And then because I have this analytical bent and I like to figure things out and how puzzles fit together, I eventually got into sales training and sales performance improvement. I've had all the titles over the years, sales effectiveness, more recently sales enablement, one was sales performance development. A lot of them were just sales training, although I didn't just do the training job because, as we all know, training alone isn't really enough to move the needle. So I've been around doing corporate department management, and at two different times I've been a consultant. I've helped two different organizations put a sales effectiveness practice in place for their company, a client-facing practice, including currently with Sparks IQ, where I'm the VP of Sales Effectiveness Services. And Sparks IQ does strategic pricing, which is how the company started, and delivers a 10x return for wholesale distributors who work with us. But we also have expanded into sales effectiveness services with a variety of sales analytics, hiring assessments, Salesforce diagnostics, and of course, sales training.
Wonderful. I mean, that's a lot, and I'm excited that we'll be chatting about your book today. Just to go back, why did you think that you needed to write this book?
Yeah, it's a good question. So if you look back at my career, and I talk about this in the book, I've been doing what's called sales enablement today as early as 1991, well before the term sales enablement was ever really spoken. And I was really lucky in my career in the early stages. I came out of sales and sales management into sales training. And I worked at a company where they gave me a wide berth and a lot of control over what I actually did, with one caveat. They wanted to see results for the investments that they were making in sales training. Now, remember, I didn't come up as a trainer other than, you know, training salespeople on the job. So I read everything I could get my hands on. I talked to people who had been in some form of the sales performance improvement profession. I learned everything I could, and I used that as almost a learning laboratory to test ideas and try things. But the ultimate goal was to move the needle, because that was the only real expectation senior management had placed on me. And so with the reading and listening and talking and trial and error, I actually eventually figured out how to really move the needle. But I learned that it took a lot more than just training itself. So, you know, I didn't officially have anything to do with marketing or compensation or hiring, but I was starting to do this cross-functional collaboration with these functions and made sure that everything we were doing, the content that we were creating, the training that I was doing, the compensation programs, the hiring to get the right people in the right seats on the bus, but all of that was coordinated and supporting the sales force and going to market more effectively to win more deals with our buyers. And so I really was fortunate to have that early start, because as I started to get more exposure to other people and other companies in training, I figured out that not everybody was really getting the same kind of results. And, you know, if you read the training magazines, they were all talking about how do we get a seat at the table and how do we move the needle. And I was surprised that that wasn't commonplace. And then something interesting happened. The performance consulting book started to get published. A concept called human performance technology, or HPT, started to gain some ground. Yeah, I got really excited, right? Because I thought, okay, this is it, right? Now we're going to really start to get performance oriented. And I thought we were all going to be moving from training to performance. In fact, there was a seminar that the International Society of Performance Improvement launched, I think it was probably in the 80s or early 90s sometime, called Moving from Training to Performance. And I went to that to see if there was anything else that I could learn. And, you know, what I learned is I pretty much could have been probably one of those instructors. But I was excited that this movement was now in place, right? And then, you know, a couple of years go by, and I just don't see it happening. So there's always this bell curve, right? On the far right side, there were people who were doing this performance consulting and applying it to sales, and they had backgrounds and understood things like organization behavior and organization development and change management and, you know, Lean and Six Sigma and all of that, right? And they were applying those things to the sales profession and really moving the needle. But other than that far right side of the bell curve, right, everyone else was still talking about how do I get a seat at the table and, you know, how do I move the needle. So I was really disappointed that that whole thing didn't, like, catch fire and spread across the entire profession. So here we are, years later, right? I have, you know, I'm no longer thin and I don't have hair anymore. And sales enablement has finally emerged as a function. And guess what? Collaborating across functions with the hopeful intent of improving performance. And here we are again on the right side of that bell curve, right? We have practitioners who take a strategic, systematic approach, and they're seeing positive impacts on win rates and quota attainment. They're using approaches more like history repeats itself, performance consulting. But again, to the left of that part of the bell curve, right, the bulk of practitioners are just not delivering those same results. And we're having the same conversations about how do I get a seat at the table and how do I move the needle? There's a pattern here, right? Mm. And so that is the purpose for me of why I wrote this book. I wanted to help the current sales enablement leaders or the new practitioners and sales leaders who want to implement sales enablement in their companies. So to start or evolve a sales enablement function that truly impacts performance and delivers results. Because I see so much potential with this sales enablement movement, like I did with performance consulting in the past, and an opportunity to really impact the profession. I just didn't want to see the field make all those same mistakes of the past. So for me, that's the real purpose of the book.
So, Mike, this was something which was in your subconscious, right? This was going on through your head as you're looking at what's going on in the industry, as you're interacting with customers, as you're seeing your customers selling to their customers and trying to get success and so on. This is sort of playing in your mind, right? Look, I saw this happening in the 1980s. It sort of fizzled. I can see this pattern repeat again. I need to do this. When was this actually in calendar time? When did you sort of decide, I need to now actually go down and write this book?
Well, I wish I could take full credit for the impetus to get pen to paper. Because what I've been doing is I've been blogging, not even fairly consistently. When I really felt I had something to say, I've been documenting these things over time in blog posts and in ebooks and those sorts of things. And I had been playing with the idea that I ought to do something larger. I didn't know whether I wanted to do the book, whether I wanted to start a community, do a workshop. And so ATD, actually, and I had been an ATD member since the 80s that I was talking about, that it, actually the probably the early 90s, I first became an ATD member back when it was the American Society for Training and Development. Today, it's the Association for Talent Development. They approached me because of my involvement in their conferences and in their association and said, would you be interested in writing a book on sales enablement? And so I just jumped at the opportunity because I had been mulling these things around in my head and wasn't sure. And I figured, well, this is a sign, right? Let's team up with ATD, who's been incredibly good to me over the years. I've spoken at so many of their conferences. They have a huge talent development conference in May. And then they started ATD Sell, which is their completely dedicated conference to sales enablement. Hmm. And so I thought, well, this is ideal now. So everything sort of came together and I said, yes, let's get this down. And I've got a concept called the building blocks of sales enablement that I've been working on over the years. And we just it just happened that way.
So when was this? When did ATD approach you? When how many months back was this?
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. So it was it might be by now a year and a half.
Okay.
Or so. Okay. Yeah. So it's
so it's early 2020. Early 2020.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And once you agreed to do it and you thought this was a good opportunity to work with ATD and you sort of committed yourself to this book, what did you do next?
Okay. Well, I guess the short answer is I started to try to compile all of the things that I had written that I thought would be a good part of the book and would fit into the outline and the chapter structure. So I had some things together. Again, I had ebooks, I had blog posts, I had things I had written over the years. And so it was really trying to create a chapter structure that made sense, find the things that existed that I could modify and update and improve to my latest thinking, and then trying to get it all together, write the things that I didn't have, right? I didn't have anything relative to sales compensation, for example. There were some things that I hadn't been writing about that were part of the blocks or that I had done over time. So it was really a gathering process and a gap analysis process so I could figure out what did I have to do and how do I have to organize this. But I'll tell you the toughest thing, as someone who's been writing for a while, I thought this was going to be a lot easier than it actually turned out to be, because there is so much information that I've gathered or used or things I've done over the years. It was, how do I organize this in a way that I can share it with someone else and get them to understand without, you look at all the pieces of the blocks, right, without exploding their heads. So that was an interesting struggle in terms of how do I organize this content. And the building blocks I had already existed, but I really had been expanding them over time, and I realized when I put my first version together that I really hadn't called out, for example, the need for a charter, or what I used to call just a strategic plan for the function. Today we call it a charter, so I can, I'm using the more common terms, but the need to start with a charter, the need to identify the stakeholders and the folks that you're going to collaborate with across these various functions. In sales enablement today, we call that cross-functional collaboration. I didn't have some of those pieces in. So I really stepped back and took a look at the blocks and said, how do I get this visual and how do I get this concept to truly represent what I had been doing? And so I expanded things a bit, created the chapter structure, gathered all the information, started writing to close the gaps and really trying to upgrade and improve the content that I had done previously, and bring all this together in the book. I would say, as I was going through this process, the biggest challenge I think I faced was the interplay between the individual blocks themselves, things like sales hiring, sales training, sales coaching, and what I called the systems or the systems thinking approach. And I had been working with four systems over the years: the sales hiring system, I called it initially the sales support system, but I call it the sales readiness system today. A subset of that is another system, the sales training system. And the training sales system has a subset called the five stages of sales mastery and behavior change. And then there's an entire sales management system. And the building blocks are like these individual elements. Here's what you have to do to be successful in training. Here's what you need to do to be successful with hiring. But the systems are how you execute those blocks and create something that is repeatable, replicable, an approach that will consistently produce predictable results.
Right.
And so it's the application of systems thinking to each of these things that I think make the building blocks really powerful. So I had this decision to make: am I going to teach the systems? Am I going to teach the blocks? Do I teach both of them? How do I intertwine that and make it understandable for somebody who hasn't been doing this over this 30-year period? And so where I settled was I was going to teach the blocks. I would talk about and explain systems thinking, and I would incorporate the systems into each of the blocks as I was teaching those blocks. And in the end, that turned out, I think, to be a good decision. I'm fortunate for that, because now as I look at the book and I talk to other people about it, it's like, oh, okay, so I get that. So these are all these individual elements, but to actually bring that to life and implement it in a way that can run in a cadence and be replicable, repeatable, I've got to build systems around these things to make them work. And I was like, yes, that's it, bingo. So I went through quite a journey in my own mind to get to that point. So that was a really interesting experience for me, is how do I take all of this and explain it in some way that other people can understand it, can grab onto it, and then more importantly, maybe implement something from it and improve their results.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
These blocks have developed over a long period of time. So they have been tested in multiple companies, in multiple verticals, in companies from startup software firms where they were done at a very basic level to the Fortune 10, right, where they were done at a much more sophisticated and full level.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode where we left it. As you are working on this building blocks, did you go out and sort of validate or seek inputs from other practitioners to see whether these blocks were like universal or these blocks were something that, I mean, obviously they make sense to you and I'm sure they make sense as it is, but were these things the same blocks that other, you know, your colleagues and friends in the space were seeing?
Yeah, I'm actually doing that all the time anyway. But yes, so the good news is these blocks have developed over a long period of time. So they have been tested in multiple companies, in multiple verticals, in companies from startup software firms where they were done at a very basic level to the Fortune 10, right, where they were done at a much more sophisticated and full level. So they've sort of stood the test of time in a variety of circumstances. But over that time, and certainly as I was redesigning the blocks, I did reach out to friends in the space, trusted advisors, mentors, you know, just other frontline practitioners who were doing the work. I was publishing bits and pieces of things over time, even before I had the plan to write the book. So I had a lot of interactions to those. My friend Larry Ball, he and I worked at Richardson together, and then he's been in sales enablement since, doing phenomenal work. And he offered some great advice to me that I took. I've had a great relationship over the years with Tamara Shank, who has written her own book on sales enablement. So I've been interacting with all of these leaders and thought leaders in the space. And was constantly bouncing ideas back and forth. And so it certainly has been a journey in that regard. And, I always look for feedback from the market. So, sure. It's fun to do that because it's almost a little like the cross-functional collaboration that you do when you're in sales enablement, right? You're constantly trying to collaborate with others and get in alignment and find a better way to produce results.
Absolutely. And the reason I asked you this question is because where do you draw the line or draw the connecting line between sales being science and art, right? So which part of sales is science and which part of sales is art, and how do you draw that line? And I was sort of trying to dig on that part that the building blocks looks like the science of how you're going to do it and how did you sort of go about validating it? So that was the limited reason for the question.
it makes perfect sense, and I think you're right. And I think in sales, it's the human interaction that's the art. It's the sales methodology and process and how you go to market and your target market and all of that, I think, is the science. And then of course there's science and study now around conversation intelligence and what actually works, but it's still the humans who have to go execute that and have the conversations and interactions and help, you know, help buyers resolve their concerns and all of that. So it's, I think it will always be a science and an art. The science is behind the scenes and the art is how you bring it to life, which is very much in parallel to the building blocks in the systems, right? The building blocks are all these pieces, all the science of how each of those things happen, and the systems are how do you bring that to life in an organization. So there are interesting parallels like that, I think.
Absolutely. So let's touch upon the second chapter where you talk, and second and the third actually, where you focus on buyer acumen and buyer engagement content. So elaborate a bit about what you are focusing on there.
Yeah, sure. So it all starts with the buyer, or let's say it should. I know that it doesn't always. In some organizations, we are still so seller-centric sometimes or sales-centric. But I believe it really starts with the foundation of buyer acumen. And buyer acumen really is an understanding of your target market and your personas, the folks who are actually engaged in your opportunities and have the problems that you solve and look for solutions like you deliver. And so if you understand them, if you understand what I call coin op, their challenges that they face, the opportunities that they might have to capitalize on, the impacts of either not solving the challenge or not capitalizing on the opportunity, right? The needs that that creates for them to get to a desired future state, the outcomes that they're looking for when they get there, what would good look like, and then how would they prioritize those needs and outcomes? And if you understand those sorts of things about your buyer, and then you can start to look at what's the journey that they go on? What's the buying process that they typically follow? And this is an amalgam, right? This is a compilation because there is no one buying process that every single buyer follows. Some of them barely have a process. But in general, those who have an organized approach toward making a purchase, what are they doing? And if you understand your personas, in this case, let's say we've got four personas that you typically work with, and you understand the journey that they go on and the stages and their decision-making and process, you can start to capture what I call buying process exit criteria. Now, exit criteria is a geeky term from Six Sigma in software development that just means in a given stage, what has to be completed in that stage before you can move forward. And so I say that buying process exit criteria is whatever each decision maker needs to see, hear, feel, understand, or believe in that stage to feel comfortable moving forward to the next stage with you. And look, there are no magic bullets in sales, but I think buying process exit criteria is probably as close as we'll ever get to having a magic bullet, because salespeople tend to do the same thing over and over and over in each stage, hoping for a great result. Buying process exit criteria takes a different tactic. For each of these decision makers in the deal, what do they need to see, hear, feel, understand, and believe in the current stage to feel comfortable? And you know what? Sometimes in a given stage, all of their exit criteria might be exactly the same. But other times, every one of them may have something unique or different that's important to them in that stage. When that's the case, if a salesperson does a whitewash approach, they're capturing the hearts and minds of some of those buyers, but not all of them. And this is where the wheels start to come off the bus, I think, in the complex sale, where you're working with multiple decision makers. So if you really understand your buyers and you understand their coin op, as we talked about, you understand the general exit criteria, you can only get this generalized by research. But you need to either talk to your buyers or others like them, or you need to hire a professional who knows how to do this and lay that foundation of buyer acumen. Because everything that you do from this point forward builds on that. Now, there's a difference between great marketing personas and exit criteria documentation and reality. The map is not the territory, right? You know, the map tells you generally, you know, what it looks like and how to get there, but it doesn't show you where the potholes are or when a pedestrian is going to jump out in front of your car, right? The map is not the territory. So in reality, the salesperson now needs to go deeper than that persona, but they have a starting point. Also, you can then move through the other building blocks. You've got buyer engagement content. Well, if you know generally what matters to each of your personas, and you know their general exit criteria in each stage of the sales process, from, you know, before they're engaged with you when you're prospecting to just about when they're ready to make a final decision, if you know their exit criteria, you can start to build content and collateral and documentation and ebooks and videos and white papers and product features. You can start to build collateral that will support their decision process in every stage. And so this becomes the map for the things that you create. Now, you want to make those things so they're customizable for when the real person has a different interest or slightly different interest than the persona research that you've done. But you now have a starting point for buyer engagement content. And then you also have a starting point for sales support content. What's the content that you'll build to support your salesperson in executing as they go to market with these buyers? Then you have the ability to hire people that will work in this way, to train people more effectively to work with these buyers, to coach them more effectively on your methodology and process. Then you have your process and methodology. You have sales analytics and your metrics that you're going to measure. You have technology and tools that support it. You have compensation that rewards the right behavior, and you prepare your managers more effectively to support all of this. And suddenly, you've worked through a dozen building blocks. If you tie that together with systems thinking and the communication with your sales team and with your cross-functional collaborators, and then determine if you want to offer support services, things like coaching services or a deal desk or building presentations, almost an SLA, right, a service level agreement between sales enablement and the sales force, right? Then you have sales support services. And those are all of the building blocks of sales enablement, all starting from that foundation of buyer acumen.
Great. I think you sort of summed up the entire book very, very neatly. Before we close this discussion, what would you expect the takeaway to be for your reader?
I think the simple message is these ideas and the tools mentioned in the book can help you start or evolve a sales enablement function that will deliver results. And so there are even some bonus chapters in the book that I think people can take away to do that. There's one on how to get started. So if you're starting fresh, how do you get moving? There's one on performance-based sales onboarding. Onboarding is this evergreen topic. Everyone wants to shorten ramp-ups and improve new hire production. But again, like salespeople sometimes, we're all talking about the same stuff and all doing the same stuff, but it's not differentiating or moving the needle enough. So I talk about a performance-based sales onboarding approach. And then there's evolving to performance consulting, like we talked about in the beginning. And so I think the takeaway is wherever you are in your journey, you'll find something to help you start or evolve to get better results with sales enablement.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us and talking to us about your book. When is this coming out?
It's on Amazon now for pre-order. the building okay. blocks of sales enablement, but it launches on September 14th. And for anyone who is going to the ATD conference, their international conference and exhibition at the end of August and into early September, I'll be doing a pre-release book signing there at the conference in Salt Lake City.
Wonderful. I'm sure some of our listeners will land up there at some point and hopefully pick up the book, and I'll look forward to hearing from them. Mike, thank you again.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books by Andrea Worlds and many others. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.